It's not just the diet. It's how much of the diet that you feed, when you choose to feed the diet during the day, and how many times you choose to feed the diet during the day that makes differences, as well as your other things that you do with your animals.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Blending passion for customer success with love for pet nutrition, Trow Nutrition. Kemen Pet Food and Rendering is dedicated to supporting longer, fuller pet lives. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rengen Pet Nutrition. We partner with a purpose.
Hello, well, welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast. I have a great pleasure today to have a discussion with Dr. Farkas and Dr. Shoveler. And we're going to talk really about pet food and how ingredients go all the way to the pet food we feed and how the different steps are at that and how we produce a quality product and what can we say about that product. So maybe I'll just start. Both of you have been on these podcasts before, but you just give me a little bit, if you would, each of you, of sort of how you got interested in this part of pet food science.
Well, Dennis, I think my interest originally came from the fact that I am an expert in protein and amino acid metabolism is where my big love is. And I was working with baby pigs in my PhD, and I got into a conversation with some pet food scientists from the IAMS company. And I started telling them that I thought the approach to protein and amino acids was wrong, that I had new insights, I wanted to do research in pets. And I think if we look at my track record, we can tell that that conversation started everything for me, at least. So that's where my passion came from. But I, like everybody else, I grew up with lots of animals, and I love animals, and I would far prefer to work with animals every day in research than doing the same with humans. And I'm not saying I don't want to work with humans, but I work with those every day, but I just don't want to work on humans like I work on animals. Okay. So that's where my original interest came from.
That's great. How about you, Dr. Farkas?
Well, I'm maybe a mirror image or a reflection there. I've got some similar background, but I've always had nutrition and food as an interest, both personally and professionally. I certified as a boarded nutritionist and started realizing that as much as I loved the working with animals people, and this goes back even farther in my career through vet med, is I was really a working with people veterinarian. And so the moment when the client finally understands something really important about managing their pet's disease, and it all makes sense to them why we're doing X, Y, and Z, and why they've got to jump through the hoops that they've got to jump through, and then translating that to the improved care that that pet gets, that's what it is for me. And so I am that kind of like client handholding vet. And I think that there is a different need for that in nutrition than a role that really exists right now. And so that's what I'm really working on. I'm working towards some client education pieces that sort of are along the lines of empowerment and helping people feel confident that they're making great choices for their pet in a landscape that doesn't really support that all that well.
Oh, both fascinating. And just to put my space in it, I started out in large animal nutrition, and then maybe a bit like you, Dr. Shoveler, I had a sort of epiphany that, you know, these concepts could be applied to pets and make a difference for people who wanted to rich relationship to lengthen and enrich their total time with their pets. And seemed like nutrition was a great way to do that and a way to understand biological science, you know, from that perspective. And of course, have to smile for someone maybe thinking about having this in the field. People pay well for good training in that area. So consider it, please.
Tired of navigating the pet food industry alone? The Pet Food Inner Circle brings together the brightest minds in pet nutrition, where seasoned professionals share real insights and tackle the challenges that matter most. When you need answers, industry leaders are just a conversation away. Ready to join the circle? Visit petfoodinnercircle.com and connect with your peers today.
Let's talk about this thing, though. We have this just broad spectrum of products available, and we were going to talk about ingredients all the way to what the pet owner is buying. Could you, either one of you, both of you, perhaps give me your perspective of how you might design the best system to bring that idea all the way to market?
Ooh, that's a good question, Dennis. I love it.
Yeah, I think it may require a lot of thought. Maybe to start would be where most people come at it today, because the nuance that you had, Dennis, I think is really the dog or cat that final diet gets applied to. And I think what's also important to say, it's not just the diet, it's how much of the diet that you feed, when you choose to feed the diet during the day, and how many times you choose to feed the diet during the day that makes differences, as well as your other things that you do with your animals. So, for example, While I can see a benefit for higher protein diets, I would never tell someone to use a high protein diet if their dog or cat had very low activity. It cannot make muscle without exercise, so you're not going to actually be able to use that protein. So that was an example, but maybe what people tend to do today is to target a philosophy for a brand. Then within that brand, you tend to have some of, you're going to have all the standard, you're going to have puppy kitten, you're going to have maintenance, maybe you're going to weigh in over there in aging. And then beneath that, it's claims areas. So, are you making a skin and coat claim? Are you making a GI claim? And what people are doing today in the store when they're purchasing that, if they're not being driven by anyone else, is they're selecting those foods. If they read the claims, they're selecting them based on, oh, I'd like my cat to have better skin and coat health. But that isn't always achievable with that pet, with that diet. And so I think what you're asking about leads me right into handing the baton over to Dr. Farkas here, because that's really where you need that insight about who is the patient that I'm looking at and how do I select the right diet when I know all this information about this individual animal.
Yeah. And I mean, what I thought was interesting about Dennis's question is it brings about like, how would I redesign this whole system? Yes, I have ideas. I can't do it myself. I need everybody, but yes, we'll get there. But to address what you were just talking about, Dr. Shoveler, is, what people are doing, you responded more from what pet food manufacturer people are doing. I'm going to respond more from what pet owner people are doing, which is they're doing this. They're standing in the pet food aisle, staring at this wall of options, this absolute sea of different potential choices, and being completely overwhelmed and having no idea how to make a distinction. And when we're faced with that and no real framework for making a distinction based on something important or relevant or format that we understand, we're going to choose anything that feels familiar. Like you said, a skin and coat claim. Oh yeah, my obese cat who's completely sedentary has a terrible coat. I'd like him to have a better coat. So that's the diet I'm going to choose. Well, that's probably going about it from the wrong direction, but I can absolutely understand how people get there. There's no way to, my phrase that I like is for this is there's no structure for sorting, organizing, and prioritizing all of the information that they come across. So that skin and coat claim may land with just as much impact as your veterinarian saying, this is obesity, we need weight reduction, we need increased activity, and we need, you know, whatever medical therapy. But there's no, those are on the same level without any sort of structure for prioritizing them. So it's a mess, and it's not really fair to expect pet owners to sort this out for themselves.
But doesn't that bring us back to a very significant problem? Because we would like to help people. And so I would like to say, okay, here's some overarching truths one can look at in this space we're in and say, here's why I would recommend you think about this. Dr. Farkas, you said, okay, you have to choose, right? You have to choose between this obesity that's probably causing the skin problem, or at least certainly associated with it, or the skin problem. And so that's sensible. But I wonder if we can't step back, because I have a lot of passion for this. I think you do too. Let's talk about how that product comes forward. My bias is probably easily seen and extreme in that, I'll put it this way. I hired people for their intelligence. I always hired intelligent people. So happy with that. The only people that actually had to leave couldn't get along with other people. And so it just shows the value of the team, right? So if some individual comes to you or me and say, I've got it all, I'm going to put it all together, I'm the person, that's not going to be a very successful project. But if we can put together a group of people that maybe have these varying expertise, then that have a much greater chance of success. I wonder if we might talk about that a little bit.
I would far rather make pet food with you guys than with somebody who thinks that they're going to make all the going to be able to do this themselves, or if somebody who says that I should be able to do it myself.
Yeah.
Where to start? Dad, I think I agree. Well, I don't think I do agree with you. And in fact, we say that in my lab all the time. Teamwork makes the dream work. My students know that I took that same training from industry that you had. I totally agree. Our teams were extremely multifunctional in industry, and they also changed for the different stage gates that where we're going in, because you need to check things at different times. But I think that teamwork applies to this all the way, Dennis. Even like I look at within nutrition, no nutritionist, if every nutritionist says that they know every single thing about nutrition that every deep expert in every area knows, then
don't hire them.
Yeah, then I'm so impressed, because I can't. When I go into other nutrient classes, I reach out to the next expert beside me who's been working in that area for decades. So they'll catch me on those little things. So when your question about making a food, it's from tip to tail. using a dog and cat analogy here, but I can't make a good food if I can't get the right ingredients. I can't make a good food if I have the wrong food scientists working on the product and product stability and the effects of processing. I can't sell my product unless I have good marketers and a business to business relationship. So it's really large multifunctional teams. And I think that at each stage, it's multifunctional as well. So I think that PhD nutritionists like us hold a different skill set than veterinarians do. I don't in a million years want to touch feeding and managing animals under disease. And that's a different skill set than the research skill set. And so I'm just emphasizing that I think diversity in your team will result in the best idea that has the best chance of getting to market.
You just gave me the best idea for an educational piece that I want to create for pet owners, which would be like a tour through pet food from inception to product, you know, end of the line production with. This is a meet the team of everybody who went into doing a great job in making this. And I feel like that would be a better representation of quality in pet food than some of the questions that we're now trying to kind of teach people to ask pet food manufacturers, which is sort of a conversation that I think is set up to fail anyway. Because I think then that would be the most helpful in saying like...
It's interesting to me, isn't it?
Sorry. I was just going to say, if pet food manufacturers can in some way give us some assurance that they're working with these kinds of people within their product, that's more assuring to me than any one piece of data or one answer to a question that they could provide.
Well, that's interesting too, because lots of times I think the person purchasing the product, they have a single contact. Like with you, Dr. Farkas, perhaps it's you or a veterinarian, or it's a breeder, or the person, you know, at the pet food store that's making a recommendation, and you're asking for a much broader sort of understanding. Is it possible? How do we try and get that to happen?
Well, I mean, that's probably a ridiculously hard and decades long task, because we're talking about probably changing the regulations and labeling on pet food. And we already know that takes forever. And I mean, I can't even pretend that that's a realistic thing to do right now.
So as somebody's watching this and they're going to say, you know, here are three experts, you've put your career into making and telling people about pet food. And even to a certain degree, in your case, Dr. Farkas, saying, buy this pet food. And they're not getting how to get there from us, right? I mean, I know at some point you're going to say, just give me a call. I have a business. But what do we tell them? How do they know?
I don't tell people anymore.
How do you help them know then?
Yeah, I'm doing my best to teach people a structured framework for understanding these things. But it's going to come down to there is missing data. We don't have all the information that we would like to have about every single product you could possibly ask me about. And I think then what ultimately it comes down to is we have to at some point have some trust in the manufacturer based on something. And whether that's their reputation in the industry or personal relationships with colleagues, those sorts of things, that's sort of what we're left with, is because there's nothing that requires any particular company to do things that really, really demonstrate that they're doing a great job with this.
What do you think, Dr. Scheffler?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's really important to say too that I've never met anyone in the pet food industry who is trying to do something that would harm an animal. Never have I ever even heard an inkling of us moving towards that. Now, is it possible without a diverse team that you don't know what you don't know? Absolutely it is. And so you know, I might be overeducated, and so this might be a very biased opinion, but education will make the difference. That really brings us down to, though, when we think about the tiers that we need to educate, we have to think very carefully and targeted. There, you know, the three of us will go to a 1-hour seminar on lysine. A consumer will never do that. A consumer doesn't need to know about lysine. What do they need to know about in their food, and how do we educate them? But that's just the consumer. And then I start coming to all the influencers. How do we better educate them? That includes your pet store associates as well. And it's about fueling them with enough information. But I think this might be a good opportunity when we think about that is also making sure that everybody isn't wildly brand, doesn't have a brand preference. So I've had this experience going into different pet food stores because I like to try to see what they're telling people all the time. So I'll say, oh, I'm in here today because my dog is so itchy and I don't know what's going on, but I think it's the food. And then I see what happens, right? And then I get different kinds of things and I can start thinking about, okay, well, there's a deficit in knowledge there and a deficit in knowledge there. But it would be great if there was a tool for the consumer, and I don't know how you do this with the pet food companies, just to be clear, where it asks you things like, what is your socioeconomic status? How, maybe not that, but how much are you willing to spend on pet food in a week? What kind of animal do you have? What life stage? Some questions about the animal. Do you have any cultural preferences for ingredients? Like, you're not going to sell a high meat diet to a vegan, right? So you have to start being sensitive about that. Do you care about X, Y, Z, all these other things? Maybe they're really caring about sustainability. And then it would be nice for that program to go, you know what is in would hit all of these for you is these four diets. But that doesn't exist now. And I think people land in the wrong diet for their pet in some instances. But I also acknowledge that the vast majority of pets can eat almost anything for a large period of their life, right? Just like we can, right? People eat McDonald's every day.
Yeah.
And are okay, right?
It's cheap calories. Be sure of that. Yeah,
the cheapest. Thank goodness this is the Pet Food Science Podcast. So I think that the real problem is getting consumers to the right diet because they don't know what they need to know about themselves and their pets to select it properly. And I completely agree with Dr. Farkas as well, is there's so many choices. It's like sitting down at a restaurant that has a 15-page menu and you're just overwhelmed. You have no idea what you're going to choose, right? And then you don't necessarily chose the thing that you wanted to eat. You just got fatigued by looking for something that you wanted to eat and chose something because everybody's ordering.
Yeah, it's a good analogy.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
I just still am pushing us to try and think. I think what I heard that you should think about the company and the best you can do to evaluate a quality process. So I would like to have an ingredient specialist. I would like to have a food scientist. I would like to have a nutritionist. I, you know, the when I started in this area, we had all of those, plus a veterinarian on every team that developed a food. Those all seem like good players. So evaluate the company. But then I say, okay, I like this company. I happen to like companies I worked for. I won't even mention them right now, but Kate and I at least had a bridge there to one company. Lots of spectrum left there still.
Yeah. Well, and what you guys are both referring to on some level is this idea of the circle of nutrition, right? I cannot answer the question, what should I feed this creature, without knowing the details of the creature, the details of the diet or diets being considered, and the environment, which for me usually translates to the owner and the lifestyle. And when we answer all of those questions, like Dr. Shoveler's proposing as an app or a survey or something that walks you through all these questions and comes out with, you know, has narrowed the field from 100% of its full volume to just 5% based on things that owner has picked, then yeah, that's really helpful. And then they can go in and choose which one they like the vibe of. And then ideally, we also have enough data on those products that somebody who has some more technical expertise can say, no, I actually need you to pick this one and not that one because of protein or fiber or whatever the case may be.
What do we do next? How do we summarize this very complex and really, I think, quite critical question to something that you could tell a person in an elevator? I have 3 minutes. They ask, what's my best pet food? Is it possible? What would you tell them?
Let's see. I'll take it from a student perspective and how I teach students to think. I ask the question very first day of class every year. I have already given them the intro. They know that I worked for P&G and then Mars. They know that I'm a named research chair for Champion. And then I all of a sudden I tell them that I've gotten grants from and go boom, 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 go through all these pet food companies. And when I first did the exercise, words got out now and they're a lot better. What I always think is interesting is at the beginning when they didn't know this, they're like, oh, you worked for Mars, so you feed Royal Canin. Everybody, boom, right there. They're like, you knew, in our opinion, that's the highest quality in the Mars portfolio. You work for that company, therefore you fed what they were perceiving as the highest quality. And then I always stopped them and I said, guys, you didn't ask me if I had a dog. You didn't ask me if I had a cat. You didn't ask me if I was dealing with anything with them. You didn't ask me what my personal opinion in terms of food is. And so I think that we would probably be best, and I think that is where the majority of the industry is going. The veterinarian is the key opinion leader. I think we should continue to educate the veterinarian. And I know there's a lot of move on to improve that across veterinary schools. I think there's bigger opportunities here for paraprofessionals, a veterinary technician. I think there's a huge opportunity for the pet food retailer to become more educated. And then I think that we need to empower the consumer to ask those more educated paraprofessionals when they aren't sure what to do. I think that's how I would approach that, other than that app, which I think Dr. Farkas is going to start to work on developing anyway. So
she'll be calling you, I'm sure. You've got the few minutes. Could you summarize your thoughts for us?
I'm going to be calling both of you. Well, I think that this is hard to give a specific answer to. And the problem is that veterinarians are constantly pinned down for a specific answer. And I don't think that's fair for a bunch of reasons. And I think that a lot of the time people don't even like the answer that they're given in response to that question. And so I tend to try to turn it back around on people and ask them to figure out what's important to them and what makes sense to them. Like you mentioned, personal preferences for sustainability and ingredients and sourcing and ethics and these sorts of things are becoming bigger and bigger for people. And the only thing that happens when we devalue or deprioritize that thought is that the entire rest of what we say gets rejected. And so, sure. And there are so many options that we can almost always find something that does what we need it to do for the pet that also does what we need it to for the owner. And so I will start with what the owner feels strongly about and work from there. Okay, we need a maintenance diet. Okay, we need this, we need that. And just kind of work down a process that makes sense. And maybe we don't end up at a diet that I would choose. Maybe I would, you know, pick a different brand because I know half the nutritionists on staff with them, and that's who I would want making my pet's food. But I'm happy to tell people that that's the case and that that's my experience and that's where my, you know, personal trust just automatically lies. But I'm not going to ask anyone to replace their trust with mine. And so I think that giving people that empowerment to say, just make a choice and know that it's just a trial. It might not perform very well for them in their house and their pet. And then they have all of the criteria that they can use to make a next choice with what they learned in that first trial. So it hasn't been a loss. There's no failure.
Oh, thank you. I think, you know, this is a many-faceted problem, and it's not an easy thing to come up with a quick answer. So those are helpful, I hope.
People hate the quick answer because what happens is you have this exam visit, or at least in the clinic, right? You have this exam visit that was scheduled for itchy skin or ears or poop or something, and we've spent 28 minutes out of our 30 minutes on that, and in the last 2 minutes, the client goes, okay, tell me what you think about diet X. And the veterinarian has to either do a complete nutritional assessment to be able to actually answer this question, which would take days, right, to gather the information from the client, assess the diet history, compare that to the medical record and response to feeding, et cetera, and then explain it all to the client, figure out what the client wants and needs out of it. That's not realistic. So I give an answer that is, well, companies XYZ make our therapeutic diets. So, you know, they have some track record in doing a good job with quality and nutrition. So feed one of their maintenance diets. That's an easy answer. But I will also tell people that they're pinning me down and they're getting the 2-minute answer because they didn't give me an opportunity to give a good answer.
Schedule another appointment, perhaps. Let's talk about the food feeding.
Or I'll ask them to do the diet history questionnaire so that we can have a full visit and do that nutritional assessment, and then we can answer it well.
Thank you. I think we've kind of covered it. I know I don't want to sort of go away saying we didn't come with the right answer, but I hope we've shown that this is a complex space and it's not easy. I liked our answers about rely somewhat on reputation so that you know you've got a quality product coming to you. I noticed we didn't say buy this form or that flavor or this, because I don't think that would give the right answer, even though some people would rely on it for an answer. We did talk about the specific values to the specific pet, which I think is fantastically important. I guess that's my summary. I think we have, I don't know if you all want to do it, but we have an opportunity for a few other conversations. We sort of spun by, and I'd love to, if you were willing, maybe talk about that another day. I would sort of like to talk about that team and the value that the different people bring to the team. I think that's fascinating and often missed, because perhaps we all get in our own space and we see only one perspective. But that's not today. Thank you for joining us. This has been the Pet Food Science Podcast, and I hope you've thought more deeply about how we might choose the right food. It's been a pleasure to talk with both Dr. Farkas and Dr. Shelburne today.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.